So hello everybody. This is Three Coaches back on our podcast again, and this time we're talking about Think Like a Monk by Jay Shetty. And with me I have
Sally Cope and also...
and Dominic Beechner. Oh, sorry.
Go,
Sally.
It's fine. You're there. It's good. You're there. That's fine.
Great. So do you want to tell us a little bit about Jay, Dominic?
Yes. So the all of us are struggling to speak today, what with the colds and everything else. Jay Shetty, youngster, under 30, I believe. He is a viral content creator, motivational speaker. Obviously, he's an author now as well. But he launched his YouTube channel back in 2016. And he's had over 4 billion views and has got over 20 million followers. So he's grown in popularity amazingly quickly, and he puts it down to his experience of becoming a Buddhist monk, which is what his book effectively is written off the back of. So it's a fascinating book, and he's done an awful lot very quickly. What are your general thoughts, Kevin and Sally, firstly about the book?
I think it's time for me to confess, actually. It didn't really gel that with me. I got the concepts and things that he was talking about, but for some reason, I kind of didn't just connect with him. One of the things I did kind of learn from it was that this whole personal development, it's very rare that there's a book that just takes you from 0 to 10. I could think of Rich Dad, Poor Dad and Property Magic are probably the only two books that have done that with me. It's very much, it takes you like from 1 to 2 to 3. And this reinforced a few things that I know, so typically around gratitude and that sort of thing. But I don't know, it just didn't work that for me.
didn't connect with it in the same way. What about you, Sally?
Yeah, so it did with me. But I don't read as in I don't read, I listen to the book, so I on audio, so I'm not sure whether that makes a difference, and maybe we can come back to that later. But what for me it was all about, I really resonated with, is to go back and really kind of unpick everything, so go back to, as I would say, basics, which is what he did by going to be a monk. So like leave your life behind and how difficult that was, but then actually just kind of appreciate everything that you need, yes, to do, and what do you need to do rather than what do you want to do, right, and build it up from there. I mean, he talks a lot about gratitude and that sort of thing, which is absolutely right, but it was just, it was very interesting, I felt, to see the other side from someone who lived, you know, as a monk, so therefore living a very simple life, but then still the thoughts, the issues, the whole thing that come from that, where you think it's going to be a blame-free environment. Not that I like the word blame because it's a bit negative, but it's there, but there was still the responsibility there. So that was quite interesting.
Can you expand on that responsibility and blame bit a bit more?
Yeah, so you kind of think, you know, in life we've all got responsibilities or whatever, and sometimes we accept it's ours, and sometimes it's other people's. That not down to me, not my fault, it's over to them sort of thing. And then you also think as a monk, you're going to live a very pure, simple life, so there'll be no, because it is so simple, there is nothing like that. You just get on and do the things you need to do, and everybody accepts it. However, what came across is that even in that very, very simple world, you've still got responsibilities. You've still got things that you have to do. You know, be it even to sort of get up in the morning and dress go to prayer or whatever, keep the place clean. So you've still got responsibilities on you, and if you don't do it, it still comes back on you, even in that very simple life. So it's about that there's no one that has no responsibilities. Everybody has responsibility, and it's about accepting these are my responsibilities, and I need to just accept that and get on.
So you can still get blame in the monk environment, is what you said.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm just to backtrack, because we dive straight into the good detailed content. Just to backtrack a little, I'm with you, Sally. I loved this book. But similar to you, Kevin, I also have a digit in that he really annoyed me initially, the way his face is on everything. It's on the front of the book. He's all over social media, and it's just like, oh, don't like this guy. And yet when I read his book, I was like, okay, I get it now. I get why he's done this and why he's done it, presented it in this way, which is more around marketing and making it successful and appealing to other people. But, you know, the fact that he's all over social media and his face is on the book rather than something a bit more, I don't know, peaceful, maybe, as you'd think with Monk. The fact that he was reading his book brought an awful lot of enjoyment and context to it, and made it easy for me to listen to it, because it's quite long, isn't it? It's like, what, 12 hours plus? Yes. I forget exactly, but anyway, it's a decent chunk of time, and it's a thick book, and there's not just one idea, there's many, many, many ideas in there. So we won't go through all of them, because it would take many, many hours, but one of the ones for you, Sally, was around, you know, effectively responsible. Everyone has responsibility, no matter who they are, to some degree. And I can agree with that one, because one of the other books, The Success Principles, How to Get From Where You Were to Where You Want to Be, the first principle is 100% responsibility. You are responsible for everything in your life. And so how you perceive the news, you know, it's your responsibility. If you're getting brought down by it, then it's your responsibility to choose either to not listen to the news or read about it. Or, you know, it's your responsibility about how you react to things. So I hear you on that. What's a takeaway for you, Kevin, one that, maybe stood out for you on this incremental journey of 1 to 10?
I think it was the reinforcement of how important gratitude is, and how it's very easy to ignore a lot of things that you should be grateful for and can be grateful for. And then just the power of how that changes things, I think was very powerful.
I was actually reading a different book last night, but it was saying, don't just be grateful, be appreciative, because gratitude has an element of, oh, I should be grateful for this, because, you know, if I didn't have it, then, and there's an element of lack of, if you didn't have it, then you wouldn't be grateful. Whereas appreciation is like, it doesn't matter what it is, I'm really appreciative of it being in my environment. For everything, you know, the fact that I can look up in the sky and so appreciation, he differentiated between appreciation and gratitude. And I thought that was an interesting point. Is that relevant to our listeners, do you think, Sally?
Yeah, I think it is, because it is that actually then sort of truly being the person, or truly living your appreciation or whatever. It's interesting, because another part that I've got here from the book is the fact when it says, I am what I think I am. And I think that also links in with the appreciation. So, you know, understand who you are, right? Or decide who you're going to be. Appreciate who you're not as well. Appreciate who you are, and then live to that. You make sure that that's what, you know, that's what comes across. So I think the appreciation, you're absolutely right, it goes beyond the gratitude to the appreciation, and really deep down understanding who you want to be, who you think you are.
Yeah, there's a big good phrase there that leapt out to me. You can't be anything you want, but you can be everything you are.
Yes, so it's the difference between the ego state of wanting something that it thinks it isn't or hasn't got, versus the soul, maybe, of you are a human being, you have gifts, and you need to discover those.
Yeah.
And you tend to discover them by actually letting go and allowing things to happen and just being in tune with the things that you enjoy and excite you the most, because that's where you naturally have more energy to do them, rather than constantly pushing and living someone else's life.
Go on. I was going to say, and I think it extends even further than that, when he talks about how, you know, how people are involved, that other people are involved as well, in order for you to be the person you want to be as well. So like who you surround yourself. And there's a saying, it wasn't in here, but there's a saying about it takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah.
So it's the same sort of concept, isn't it? It's not just about you, it's about who you surround yourself with and who you go out to, how people recognize you.
Yes. And so in general, the book is around effectively self-actualization, of becoming the best version of you. So it talks a lot about values and understanding what's most important to you and helping you get clearer about those so that you get to know yourself better. Mm. And techniques that obviously monks use to do lots, you know, 50% of their time, personal development, understanding themselves, becoming more in line and attuned to who they are and how they best serve the world. And yeah, that was the other bit. So 50% personal development during being a monk and 50% service to others. And that was a really nice insight. You know, he expanded on it a lot, but it's about, you know, a happy life is when you're helping and serving other people. So how do you do that best? Are you brilliant at programming and you can make brilliant software that other people can enjoy? Or are you brilliant at, you know, leading an organization, or, you know, looking after tenants, you know, if you work in property management? Whatever it might be the best version of yourself when you do it, and learn from this book, from these little tips that he shares, to become better at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah. Mm. What other things stood out for you, Kevin? Anything, even though it didn't really resonate.
And isn't it interesting that when you do read something that doesn't resonate, and when you do things that don't resonate, how they just don't have the same impact on you as when you do connect with something?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I wonder, though, I might challenge you here. If it's partly because you're wiser than you were before, so now there's less new content, and actually the new stuff is, well, you've learned so much through your life that actually the stuff like Rich Dad Poor Dad and you know, property investing, things like that, is no longer, you won't get those aha moments quite in the same way that you used to, because I think that's more experienced.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think I certainly probably still are looking for those and expecting every book to be full of aha moments, but actually they're not. They're just reminders. So, you know, values, gratitude, living your best life, all that kind of stuff is, yes, you know, and self-belief, but it just reinforces it, and things that you might have forgotten are important, and things that you're probably not, or I'm not practicing, but I know I should be. It's a good reminder of that. So it's kind of a different experience, isn't it? I think
it's, yeah, because as we get older and learn ourselves about ourselves more, we get better at being ourselves and understanding ourselves and spotting things that are relevant to us and using those. And I think it's about refinement. I think as you're in the younger years, you discover in those big aha moments, and as you get older and you get to know yourself better, then it's more sort of refinement, as you say. It's not 1 to 10. It's you know, incremental 1, 2, 3 little things that you can add to your life. One of the things he talks about is the difference between, or he says, fear is driven by attachment and control. What are your thoughts on that, Sally?
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it in this way before. But when he goes through it, you can see that is actually sort of quite relevant or quite real. And fear is about lack of control.
Mm.
It really is, because you're not in, for most people, they are fearful of something because they do not have the control over it.
Yes.
And they don't know the outcome of it. So therefore, it is all based around that. It was just actually being put in that way that made me think about that. And going back to what you turned to Kevin, I think that's, and this is kind of based on it as well, really. The realization I've had about fear, because I've done lots of things on fear, false expectations of fear appearing real, and go out of your comfort, just do it and feel the fear and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, anyway, yeah.
But I realized that then seeing fear in a different way and then rethinking it, and as that sort of like a bit of a light bulb moment. But I think that also happens when you return, when you revisit things, like we were saying about, it's not the aha moment straight away now, because there's so many times you've heard this before. I think you also move on from that, because I think you go through phases where you're learning it and it is that, wow, great, that's really interesting. And then I think there's a phase where, I don't need to listen to this because I already know it.
Mm.
I don't need to do this because I already know it. And then I think there's the next phase where you almost get over yourself in a way. And you think, yeah, but I'm still going to, I'm going to listen to this and see if there's anything else, see what else I pick up. And there is always something else. So I think it's that there are stages that you go through I've listened to many talks, 2, 3, 4, 5 times, numerous times. And in every single time, I always pick up something else, because it's all about being, where you are at that stage. And I think it's the understanding that no one knows everything. And even if you think, I know this, you just kind of get over that and go on and still listen, because there will be something else that you're going to pick up, or you'll see it in a different way.
Yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right. The more, sometimes we'll hear something and it just doesn't click, whereas other times you'll hear it and you're like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
I remember someone texted me because they'd heard my talk for like the fifth or sixth time. And they're like, I really get it now. I get that habits are who I am.
Yeah.
It's like, yep. It's only taking you 5 times to listen to it. But it's different. You've got to be in the right headspace, as you say, to get that aha moment of I get it now. And that's why learning is repetition. And one of the things I really enjoy is that he said, be careful about what you're putting into your mind. It's, for example, listening to the news is a classic one, or maybe spending time with people who aren't reinforcing who you want to become. They're maybe holding you back. They're projecting their fears onto you about, spending money on your own education or something like that. It's so important to be aware, self-aware as much as possible the whole time, and that's something you can practice with the meditation and also just being present in this moment. The more aware of yourself you are, the more you can catch those negative worries or that anxiety creeping in, or those thoughts of all the things that maybe you're not good enough, or you can't do that, you don't know enough yet, or oh, they wouldn't ever trust you, or all those little things that the mind says to ourselves. Very often, for most people, we've always got a lot of limiting beliefs.
Yeah.
So it's being present and being self-aware so that we can catch them and stop, as he says, and turn it around into something that's going to be empowering rather than disempowering.
It came across to me as well. Understand why it happens. So be curious about it.
Yes. And that sits well with the neurological perspective of how the brain works. It's a goal-seeking organism, and it wants to understand. Now, we've created that wanting to understand why, but actually, why should there be a reason? The universe is the universe. It can do whatever it likes. But we and our brains want to understand why things happen.
Yeah.
And it's true, it makes a big difference when we do. We're like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
It isn't just this way because we say it is. It's because there's a reason behind it.
Yeah. He gives an example of with Yashram and the leader, and it's asking him and somebody else a question. I can't remember what it is, but off the top of my head. So he the Atom asks them a question and they answer as to why this happened, and they thought, and okay, so that's just the answer. Yeah, that's it, and we'll walk away. And then the Atom asked another question, as into, you know, that dug even deeper to that, and they kind of looked as if to say, well, why has he asked that? Why, you know, that where did that question come from, sort of thing. We'd answered it, but it's about that digging deeper and understanding why, isn't it?
Yes.
The true reason why.
Yeah. And so just to share with you some other ideas that were in the book, create deliberate values to form your identity. We've touched on that. Pursue higher values, things that are going to elevate you and people. Tackle life struggles and how to do that. Use mistakes as fuel to create protective shields. Yes, the thing I mentioned before, spot, stop, and then swap. So if you've got a negative, you know, spot that negative thought, stop, and then swap it for something positive. Find skills that you're passionate about, because it's about self-actualization, becoming what you're brilliant at. And prioritize alignment over achievement, which is an interesting one. So rather than always striving, just keep aligning yourself with what feels right and who you're becoming. And then you naturally will succeed, rather than always trying to achieve stuff, which is, you know, or, you know, measuring the gap rather than the gain of alignment, as per the book we discussed last month. So just to give the listeners an idea of some of the things that are covered, there's so many ideas. I mean, literally hundreds and hundreds in this book. That's quite a big fat book, and you could read it, the same book 12 times, and get different insights every time you read it. Any final thoughts on it that you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go back and give an audio version the try.
Give it a go. So I
can get into it more, because you two certainly are getting further with audio than than I am in this scenario.
I think you might gain from listening to the author, to listen to Jay say it, like we were saying. I'm certainly not going back to read it, because I don't want to have negative thoughts about it.
It's you know, everyone's got to learn or has a preference for learning in their own way. And you know, most of the ideas aren't new. In fact, of course they're not new, they're from monks, they've been around for 4,000 years, many of them. So you can, I would say, Kevin, get, you know, similar ideas from other books, but this is a very good one. I think my enjoyment came from hearing it from the author, sharing it in his own way, in his own voice. So I would definitely, I have recommended it to clients already, and they've got a lot out of it. So one for the listeners definitely is, this is definitely one to read.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to try and get my head around hearing the word Kevin and refinement in the same sentence, which I don't think I've experienced before.
I love it. Excellent.
Okay. Always things to learn.
Great. Okay, let's wrap it up. Thank you to all the listeners. This has always been a pleasure. Thank you, Kevin and Sally, because it's always great to share the wisdom and reflect on our learning just like this, because it helps us learn it even better. And it's a joy to be able to share it with the audience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
Talk to you all next time.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.